along. This is Luke Cavalli. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show, a show that has a Christian emphasis and presents some of the news items that you may not have heard on the major news media. So I'm going to lead off tonight with a little story that goes along with some things we've talked about two or three other times lately, and that is teen takeovers. And this particular one came out of Fox News, July 6th. That would have been, that would have been Monday, July 6th, 2026, by Louis Cassiano, Fox News. And the headline reads, Raleigh mayor considers youth curfew following teen takeover, violent 4th of July weekend. And the subheadline says around 10,000, that's a huge number, around 10,000 teenagers flooded Briar Creek and Glenwood South as businesses shut doors to protect staff. The mayor of Raleigh, North Carolina, is weighing whether to impose a curfew for minors following a series of shootings and chaotic events over the Independence Day weekend, in which several fights broke out and 9 people were shot amid a series of teen takeovers across the country. The violence over the holiday weekend prompted Raleigh Mayor Janet Cole to tell WRAL News she's considering enacting a curfew for those ages 17 and under. And Ms. Cole told the news outlet, quote, as mayor, I am grateful for the actions of the Raleigh police officers in response to the situations of juvenile violence across the city on the night of July 4th. And the morning of July 5th. Clearly, Raleigh is not exempt from the incidents of youth violence that are occurring across the country. We need to talk with the youth, their parents, schools, and the broader community to understand the root causes and to better coordinate strategies, unquote. One approach, she said, may be a youth curfew for those 17 years old and under, which other cities in North Carolina have implemented. City leaders were exploring many approaches that are expected to be discussed at Tuesday's City Council meeting, the mayor said. And I assume that would be Tuesday, July 7th. Around 5,000 teenagers showed up at Briar Creek and another 5,000 in Glenwood South, with half residing outside the city, the Raleigh Police Department said Sunday. Raleigh police officers initially responded just after 10:05 p.m. Saturday to reports of a fight near a movie theater and nearby stores. The incident stemmed from a teen takeover, a social media-driven phenomenon where massive crowds of youth coordinate to suddenly congregate in public spaces such as beaches, malls, or restaurants. A large fight broke out, followed by gunshots. One adult was shot and another was injured by shattered glass caused by the shooting, police said. A juvenile was found with a gun and detained, but investigators don't believe the teen was one of the shooters. Hours later, 1:35 a.m., Sunday, officers responded to multiple shootings. 6 people were shot but were expected to survive. At around 4:30 a.m. Sunday, 2 people were shot following a fight at a gas station, police said. They were taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. No arrests were made. Investigations into the shootings are ongoing, police said. On a Monday post on X, Ms. Cole called teenage takeovers a, quote, disturbing national trend, unquote. And it comments that in May, a large, unpermitted gathering on Tybee Island, Georgia, ended in panic after police said gunfire broke out along the pier. I think we may have covered that at the time. An Instagram post from Milk Bar, a bar in the Glenwood South area, said the actions of a few ruined the peace of patrons in the area. And the post states, quote, while we had 0 safety incidents inside Milk Bar, We made the proactive decision, alongside with other businesses, to close our doors to protect our patrons and staff from the surrounding unrest. Gun violence and reckless behavior have no place in our nightlife scene. We can do better, Raleigh. Unquote. Now, that was from Fox News, as I said, appearing on July 6th, 2026. It was by no means the only teen takeover on the 4th of July weekend. For example, Pensacola, Florida, a 19-year-old man was killed and six others injured after hundreds of teens filled downtown Pensacola. No suspects yet arrested. And that was from CNN. Pittsburgh. Night of July 4th. More than 100 teens shot fireworks at police and each other. Third teen takeover in Pittsburgh in a week. That's from WTAE, which I think is a TV station. Or possibly radio. Out on the other coast, Newport Beach, California. Thousands of unruly juveniles and young adults at Newport Pier. On July 4th, 350-plus police officers responded. 402 arrests. That's from DailySignal.com. St. Louis, Missouri. Police cracked down on widespread curfew violations. Took nearly four dozen minors, 17 and under, into custody. That's from KSDK.com. In Chicago, police were investigating a mass shooting that left six teens wounded in Chicago's West Garfield Park neighborhood, as well as a shooting in Minnesota earlier that wounded a 17. That's from CBS News. And up in my neck of the woods, not very far from where I grew up, over the line into New Hampshire, Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, more than 50 people were arrested for a takeover at Hampton Beach last Tuesday. Which would have, I believe, have been June 30th, I believe. All right, so the teens, once again, getting restless. And now we have a very important article. I know some of you have children. Some of you have grandchildren, perhaps even great-grandchildren, nieces and nephews and so forth. This is from the New York Post. Doctors issue warning over massively popular toy that's hospitalizing children with excruciating injuries. This is by Patrice Peck. Tuesday, July 7th, 2026. Around the world, brightly colored squishy toys, marketed as harmless sensory gadgets designed to be squeezed, stretched, and smushed, have surged in popularity. But behind the viral appeal of Nedo toys, and I should spell that out, N-E-E-D-O-H toys, behind those, doctors say a dangerous pattern is emerging. One that is sending children and teens to the hospital with severe burns amid, quote, blood-curdling screams, unquote, of pain, requiring everything from skin grafts to medically induced comas for treatment. And all it takes for disasters to occur is for the toys to be heated, frozen, or microwaved, whether as part of a viral social media challenge or totally by accident. Nedo toys, again that's N-E-E-D-O-H, Nedo toys are typically filled with a gooey material that can transform into a thick, glue-like substance when exposed to heat. A popular model, the Nice Cube, just the way it sounds, N-I-C-E-C-U-B-E, contains a natural sugar-based filling that expands rapidly when heated, increasing internal pressure, and in some cases, causing the toy to burst. Despite clear manufacturer warnings that read, do not heat, freeze, or microwave, may cause personal injury, doctors say children are being exposed to increasingly dangerous online trends, encouraging exactly that, The issue is not just the toy, but the social media environment pushing children to experiment with it. According to Dr. Alicia Webb, MD, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at Children's of Alabama, quote, parents need to be aware of this trend and all dangerous social media challenges because they can pose a serious risk to children, and the children participating are not yet mature enough to recognize the danger for themselves, she told the New York Post. Burns are already one of the most common injuries in children, but these NEDO cases are proving especially severe because of the way the heated material behaves. Dr. Webb explained, the hot NEDO toys can easily explode, causing burns to the face, eyes, mouth, body, and can even cause internal damage if the hot substance is swallowed. And Dr. Michael Cooper, director of burns at North Wells Staten Island University Hospital, also added that children are especially vulnerable because their skin is thinner and more delicate than adult skin, allowing heat to penetrate more deeply in a shorter amount of time. Cooper said, even a brief contact with a hot substance can cause significant tissue damage. These warnings are not theoretical. Now, I'm going to insert something here. This is Lou speaking. This is from the New York Post, which tends to be a little bit more of a tabloid in its coverage, but it has many, many good articles. And I checked this out. You can find similar articles on USA Today, CBS News, and many other outlets, including a number of write-ups on Facebook. So this is not just an alarmist thing. This article also includes several pictures with the names of the children involved that show these burns. One of them was Scarlett Selby, a 7-year-old from Missouri. She was placed in a medically induced coma after a NEDO toy exploded in a microwave and coated her in molten, sticky substance. The glue clung so tightly to her skin and clothing that her father struggled to remove it without causing further injury. Her father told Kennedy News, while recounting the harrowing nightmare, quote, it all happened so quickly. I heard her scream, and it was like a blood-curdling scream, unquote. She later required a skin graft after doctors treated burns near her mouth and airway. The Mueller cases, Dr. Webb said, mirror what she is seeing in her own emergency department. He says, I personally have taken care of several children and teenagers who have been burned while participating in the current NEDO microwave trend, unquote. And in the United Kingdom, a girl named Bella, age 10, suffered severe facial burns after a friend attempted a TikTok-inspired freezing and then microwaving challenge involving a NEDO-style toy, leaving blistering and missing skin. Her mother revealed in a Facebook post, quote, she has been referred to the burns unit and told she won't be able to leave her face in the sun or to have her face in the sun for at least 2 summers. They aren't sure if it will scar, unquote. And it gives some other names and pictures to go with them. There was 1 9-year-old, Caleb, and he was from, well, it doesn't say where he was from, but it does say the right side of his face was kind of melting off, basically, his mother told ABC Channel 7. I'm sorry, it does say where he was from. Caleb was from Chicago. In another case, New Mexico, 13-year-old girl suffered third-degree burns after a toy left inside a hot car for hours exploded when squeezed, releasing scalding gel onto her arms and legs. Her mother told KRQE, quote, she jumped out of the car and she's like screaming at the top of her lungs. Please, Mama, get it off. There was people all around. We were trying to get it off, and they said, don't take it off because it will rip her skin off, unquote. All right, you get the idea. There's a couple more pages, and if you want to read this, or just read some of the other comments, this is particular stories from the New York Post on July 7th, entitled, Doctors Issue Warning of a Massively Popular Toy That's Hospitalizing Children with Excruciating Injuries. You can also find more information on this topic if you do a search on the internet and just search for danger of, and then what I did is I put in this brand name, Neato Toys, danger of Neato Toys, Neato being spelled N-E-E-D-O-H. Something to be very concerned about. At first, I thought it was only these accepting some sort of an internet challenge to microwave them. But then as you heard, there was even a case where, more innocently, a young person left one of these toys in the automobile in the hot sun, and it got so hot that when she squeezed it, it exploded and spilled the hot innards all over it, burning her. So something for any parent to be concerned about, and grandparents, and aunts and uncles, too. Okay, this continuing uproar up in Maine. By the time you hear this, I'm pre-recording this. By the time you hear it, this may have been resolved, but I'll just give you the few quick highlights from the Gateway Pundit. It says, here we go, Maine Democrat Party. Other high-profile Dems withdraw endorsements say Plattner needs to drop out of the Senate race after bombshell rape allegations. Again, from the Gateway Pundit by Christina Layla. July 6, 2026. There's truth. Oh, this is what they just label truth. Democrat Senator Ruben Gallego and Democrat Representative Ro Khanna both withdrew their endorsements of Democrat Senate candidate Graham Plattner after the latest sexual assault allegations. Moments later, the Maine Democrat Party told Plattner to drop out of the Senate race. They said, quote, the Maine Democratic Party leadership is calling on Graham Plattner to withdraw as the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Another Graham Plattner sex scandal erupted on Monday as rumors swirl that the Democratic Senate candidate is going to drop out of the race. And he canceled, I'll just condense this a little bit in the interest of time. He canceled a bunch of town hall events ahead of the new damaging news piece. A woman who dated Graham, nicknamed Nazi Tattoo Plattner, told Politico that he raped her. Goes into some of the details, which I won't read. And you probably have heard about this. It's been on the radio a great deal, probably TV too. Her name was Jenny Racicot, R-A-C-I-C-O-T. She previously told the New York Times that Plattner's behavior was unsettling and reckless, but now she explained it in a little more detail. Of course, the Democrats, I'm afraid, have egg on their face, and now this is Lou speaking, because it wasn't enough that he had a Nazi tattoo. They kind of overlooked that. It wasn't enough that he was supposedly accused of making some very derogatory statements about women. He also is known to have insulted a fellow soldier. So he said a lot of problems. But now the Democrats finally, I guess, have had enough. They should have had enough a while back, but they really wanted to defeat Susan Collins. So they were willing to put up with things from Plattner that they would never have put up with some years back. I remember one year, one of the presidential candidates, seems to me he was just seen on a boat with this model. That was enough. Gary Hart, I think, was his name. That was enough to get him to resign from the presidential contest that year. But when you really want to win, I guess you can overlook things. At least they did, the Democrats in Maine. But I got a feeling by the time you hear this, he will have withdrawn from the race. All right. Now, this is a Christian program, so we do take an interest in things having to do with the Christian faith and church. I go to church weekly. I believe in Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. And if you have never encountered Jesus, I suggest you admit that you're a sinner, like all human beings. That's not saying anything bad about you in comparison to everybody else. We're all sinners. And if you make that confession to Jesus and ask him into your heart, you will be born again, as the Bible says. Well, here's something from Lightside News. They are a Catholic, Roman Catholic website, but they have a lot of good stuff. And they certainly are willing to back up Protestant churches. Is it a case like that? A man arrested with two flamethrowers, 500-plus rounds of ammo outside church. This is by Calvin Freeberger, Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. High Point, North Carolina. A man who misrepresented himself as law enforcement has been arrested for bringing an arsenal to a North Carolina Methodist church, including two flamethrowers. This is a little interjecting. I didn't know you could buy flamethrowers. Doesn't go into detail. Maybe he made them himself, or made ones. I'm just guessing. Police One, that's another venue, reports that police were called to Wesley Methodist Church in High Point over the weekend to handle an armed, camouflaged man sitting in his truck in the parking lot. An off-duty police officer in attendance first confronted the man, 44-year-old William S. Milliken III, who falsely represented himself as a police officer who was there to enforce a smoking violation. More officers arrived shortly and disarmed and arrested Milliken. Milliken was also wearing body armor, and his truck was found to contain a CO2-powered launcher designed to resemble a handgun. Also a pair of flamethrowers, a pair of crossbows, 500 rounds of ammo, three knives, oxycodone, and a notebook containing addresses of churches, schools, and other public buildings. And Police Chief, High Point Police Chief Curtis Cheeks said, thanks to the quick action of our officers, a man armed with weapons was taken into custody before anyone was hurt. The officers prevented a potentially dangerous situation from escalating and helped ensure everyone attending church services could return home safely. We also want to thank the community members who recognized a potential danger and had the courage to speak up. As we work to keep High Point safe, it's crucial that we continue to look out for each other, unquote. Authorities have not yet released details on a possible motive, but recent years have seen a disturbing rise in violence against houses of worship. A 2024 report by the Family Research Council found that there were at least 436 acts of vandalism, arson attempts, bomb threats, gun-related incidents, graffiti, and other acts of hostility in the first 11 months of 2023 across 48 states plus the District of Columbia, which was more than twice the amount as the year before. The real number was, quote, undoubtedly much higher, unquote, however, because many are not reported to authorities and or are not featured in the news or other online sources from which we collect data. And that's the Family Research Council's words. The tally represented an 800% rise from the mere 50 documented in 2018. That was from LifeSite News, Thursday, July 2nd. And a little more information came from one of their sources, police1.com. That's police and then a Roman, I should say an Arabic numeral one. Not O-N-E, but just a simple one, police1.com. And this one is much the same thing. Man arrested after impersonating law enforcement, bringing flamethrower and crossbows to North Carolina church. This is July 1st by Mark Price. And the reference says the Herald, Rock Hill, South Carolina. Dateline, Thomasville, North Carolina. A man impersonating a law enforcement officer was armed with two flamethrowers, two crossbows, a pepper ball launcher, and multiple knives when he showed up during Sunday services at a North Carolina church, investigators say. The discovery was made around 10:15 a.m. Sunday in the parking lot of Wesley Memorial Church in High Point, according to the High Point Police Department. And it goes into the same thing. William S. Milliken III is charged with felony possessing a weapon of mass destruction, misdemeanor impersonating a law enforcement officer, and possession of a controlled substance, according to court documents. And I'm going to skip down a little bit because this repeats what we earlier read. He was wearing body armor, and a search of his vehicle revealed a CO2-powered launcher designed to resemble a handgun, two flamethrowers, two crossbows, more than 100 rounds of ammunition, rolls of black duct tape, green eyes, and oxycodone pills. And High Point is about a 75-mile drive northeast of uptown Charlotte, North Carolina. And again, that was from a website called police1.com, July 1st. And people around here, even though we're out in the country, on the eastern shore of Maryland, have expressed concerns. We hear about all these attacks on churches and synagogues, a few even on Muslim houses of worship. And you have to be concerned. You'd be foolish not to be concerned. But there's a limit to what you can do about it. Just pray to God that he will protect our houses of worship. Okay, another thing having to do with Christianity, Fox News, July 6th, ancient inscription revealing Christianity's clash with mysterious cult decoded by researchers. This is by Andrea Margolis of Fox News. Archaeologists recently unveiled rare written evidence of Christianity's rise over a Roman mystery religion. They found an ancient inscription written in the same language that was spoken by Jesus Christ. The engraving was found in an underground Mithras temple at Zerzavan Castle, a Turkish fortification roughly 40 miles north of the Syrian border. The inscription, back 1,700 years, and was written in Aramaic, which is widely spoken across the ancient Near East, including by Jesus Christ. The temple was dedicated to Mithras, a deity worshipped by followers of a mystery cult associated with light and cosmic order. During the 2nd and 3rd centuries AD, Mithraism was widespread throughout the Roman Empire, and the Zerzavan underground sanctuary is regarded as one of its best-preserved temples. And I would add, this article has some very good pictures to go with it. You might want to check that out, again, on Fox News, July 6th. It goes on, the inscription is located at the entrance of the temple, along with a depiction of a cross. Its meaning has eluded researchers since it was discovered in 2017. The engraving is the first known Aramaic inscription documenting the closure of a Mithras temple. Martin Artuklu, university professor, Mehmet Sait Toprak, told Turkish state news outlet Anadolu Agency, which first reported the discovery. Toprak analyzed the inscription's language and letter forms to determine its meaning. Comparing with Old Syriac and Aramaic inscriptions from the 2nd and 3rd centuries AD, he concluded the inscription dates to the 3rd or 4th century AD. The inscription mentions both Mithras and Jesus Christ, symbolizing the shift from one faith to the other, according to Toprak. The professor told AA, that is the Anadolu Agency, that earlier coin discoveries had suggested the temple was abandoned in the 3rd or 4th century. But the newly deciphered inscription provides new direct evidence that it was closed and symbolically sealed by Christians. He added that once 4th century Roman emperors embraced Christianity, Mithraism was seen as a rival religion. The latest discovery is one of many early Christian finds resurfacing in Asia Minor, that is present-day Turkey. Last summer, archaeologists excavating the ancient city of Olympus uncovered the remains of a 5th century Christian church, bearing an inscription hidden for more than 1,000 years. The same year, archaeologists excavating Kaunos, K-A-U-N-O-S, found the remains of a Roman hospital that was later transformed into a Christian sanctuary. So that was from a write-up by Andrea Margolis, Fox News, January 6th, 2026. And I should mention that you are listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Luke Caverly. You can hear us Thursday evenings at 8 p.m., either by going to www.ci.com or by listening on shortwave. Many of you still have shortwave receivers. You can still purchase those. And you can get certain programs that are hard to find anywhere else. Now, the reception varies. That's why shortwave never became quite as common as AM and FM. But on the other hand, our program comes out of Nashville, and most nights I can get it just fine here on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is quite a few miles away, far, far more in distance than any FM station would be, or at least in daytime, any AM station. So, the frequency, if you do have a shortwave radio on Thursday evenings at 8 p.m., should mention that's Eastern Daylight Savings Time, frequency is 4.840 megahertz, and the program repeats Saturday morning at 8 a.m., and you can hear at those same two venues. Either go direct on the internet to wwcr.com, and they have several transmitters, so find the one in their program schedule that contains or that transmits our program. And the frequency, if you choose to use shortwave on Saturday morning, is 7.490 megahertz. That's 7.490. There are some other ways, and if you go to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, you can see some of the other venues at which you can hear the program. For example, KSTARTalkRadio.com is one. All right. Web Mistress Angel runs a very fine website with a lot of programs. You'll want to check that out. KSTARTalkRadio.com. All right. And if you'd like to write to me, I always love to get letters and donations, but you can certainly write without making a donation. But if you can contribute to the upkeep of the program, that would be very, very nice. It does cost about $600 a month this month because there are 5 Thursdays. It's going to cost me $700 to keep the program on the air. So if you can contribute, we have some wonderful, steady contributors. And if we can add you to the bunch, you'll be very, very helpful. And my address is Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, and it's Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you didn't catch that, I'll repeat that a little later in the program. Now, my older brother, who was 8 years older than I, died a couple of years back, might be 3 years ago now. He lived in California, and once when he flew back many years ago to visit my elderly parents, and my dad died way back in 2002, so this is a long time ago, he got, supposedly on the airplane, Legionnaire's disease. So this next article has a sort of a resonance with me that hits home, even though it occurs in New York City. This appeared in Fox News by Sophia Compton, July 5th. New York City health officials warn Central Park visitors after Legionnaires' outbreak grows on Upper East Side. And I'll just read a little bit of this, because some of this is just really for the New York folks. So I'll just condense it way down to a short article. A Legionnaires' disease outbreak at Manhattan's Upper East Side has grown to 14 confirmed cases, New York City health officials said Sunday. And they give the zip codes, but that doesn't mean too much unless you live in New York, so I'll skip over that. Legionnaires' disease is a severe form of pneumonia caused by Legionella bacteria. People can become infected by breathing in contaminated water droplets, and the illness can be dangerous, even deadly, without quick treatment. Pond cooling towers, often found on rooftops, can release mist carrying Legionella bacteria. The health department, this would be from New York City, said all cooling towers in the affected area are being tested. The cluster of disease was first announced Thursday, when only two cases had been confirmed. The area of investigation has since expanded as more illnesses were reported. New York City Mayor Sarah Mamdani said the outbreak is not tied to building plumbing or indoor air conditioning units, and residents in the area can safely drink tap water, bathe, shower, cook, and use their air conditioning at home. Officials said they will continue providing updates as more information becomes available. And this is again Lou speaking. I think in Pennsylvania, I didn't have time to look it up. Some years back, it seems to me there was a large outbreak, much larger than this one, at some convention being held at a hotel. And I couldn't tell you the name and place. I'll have to try and look that one up. But this article about the New York City Legionnaires' disease appeared in Fox News July 5th. That would have been Sunday, I believe. July 5th, 2026. The next one, too, kind of rang a bell, although it didn't quite apply as I thought it did. When I was a young kid, they built a new school in the little town I grew up in, Hamilton, Massachusetts, north of Boston. When I got to, sixth grade, a new additional elementary school was being built for what we would today call middle school. Those days we tended to call it junior high school. And I spent, let me think now, grades 6, 7, 8, and 9 in what was the old high school building. They let us junior high kids go to school in the high school building, which was built in the 1930s. Unfortunately, although it was a pretty nice building, it was torn down in, I guess, the 1970s or 80s, maybe even the 1990s. I couldn't tell you that. And I think they built a new library on the site. It was a good building. When I got to high school, 10th grade, that would have been, they built a new regional high school, two little towns banded together, and figured that they would have a new, up-to-date high school with more modern things. Hard to believe that now is, well, my gosh, it was 60 years old. I was in it when it was brand new. But the old high school, the one I went to the middle school grades in, was eventually demolished. But some of them are not being demolished. And here's an article that appeared July 6th in the Wall Street Journal, entitled "A New Wellspring for Apartment Conversions, Century-Old Schoolhouses." This is by Nicholas G. Miller. They have a quick summary. Conversions of vacant public schools into housing are rapidly increasing, with nearly 2,000 apartments created in 2024, up four times from 2023. Michael Cloutier, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, C-L-O-U-T-I-E-R, Michelle Cloutier, or Cloutier, used to take dodgeballs to the face in middle school. Today, that same gymnasium floor serves as the community center in the apartment building she calls home. Bouvier lives at the residences at Wells School in Southbridge, Massachusetts, which housed the junior high school she attended in the 1970s before it was converted into 62 apartments in 2022. Instead of dodgeball, these days she organizes potlucks for her neighbors. The Wells School is part of a wave of dozens of vacant public schools that developers have turned into rent-regulated housing, often for seniors. These conversions benefit from the spacious interiors of old school buildings and the tax credits afforded developers who preserve or rehabilitate historically significant buildings. Cloutier, or Cloutier, 65 years old, lives in the school's former art room, and she still remembers leaving her projects to dry in front of the big windows that now light her living room. She said, quote, "It's nostalgic. I remember walking the halls, up the stairwells," unquote. A Rent Cafe report last year found that nearly 2,000 apartments were created from former high school buildings, or former school buildings, in 2024, up four times from the previous year, making schools the fastest growing type of building conversion. And these conversions have shown little sign of slowing down, with 9,320 units from school to apartment conversions in the development pipeline at the start of 2026, up from 7,710 at the start of 2024, according to Rent Cafe. And they show some very interesting pictures on that, if you go to that website, the Wall Street Journal. You may have to subscribe, though, to do it. They persuaded me to subscribe for, I don't know how long it is, maybe 3 months, 6 months, something like that. It is more expensive after the first few months, of course. Now, these buildings often pose challenges. Many school buildings were built over a century ago, and years of abandonment have left them in poor condition. Developers often must replace the mechanical and electrical systems, update stairs and windows to conform to code, and remove asbestos and lead. But declining fertility rates combined with parents' increasing preference for private and charter schools are sending public school enrollments plummeting. That is forcing districts from Philadelphia to Miami to Houston to close schools, vacating what are often spacious and architecturally distinct public buildings. And it goes on to some more examples. I won't read it all. But I kind of wish that old high school that I went to in my junior high years had been preserved. It would have been expensive. It had an old heating system, I'm sure. They might have had to replace some of the windows. I don't think it was asbestos in it, and yet I don't know. That's for a fact. I couldn't say. But it was a nice building. Comfortable, wide hallways. I thought it was a very fine building. And although the new high school that I went to in 10th grade was great, I really thought the old high school was pretty nice. That a woodworking shop, a nice home ec room, art room, and with an addition, it had a nice gymnasium and several very nice new rooms that tended to be the junior high rooms. And I got a good start in my 9th grade in high school at that school. But anyway, that's nostalgic. They give several good pictures of schools like this that had been changed over, particularly for housing for the elderly, seniors, to use the polite term. And I guess I'm one of them now. I have to admit it. That was from the Wall Street Journal, entitled "A New Wellspring for Apartment Conversions, Century-Old Schoolhouse," by Nicholas Miller, July 6, 2026. Well, what else do we have? Here's one that many parents and young people will be concerned about. Also from the Wall Street Journal, June 13th. Move over. Student debt, medical bills threaten to derail young adults' finances. This is by Isaac Taylor. But then it says Chris Gash for WSJ, Wall Street Journal. So I'm not sure whether it's Isaac Taylor or Chris Gash that's doing the talking here. But in any case, he or she says, I have always prided myself on never having had a cavity. But my dentist recently told me that my 30-year record wouldn't last if I didn't get my wisdom teeth pulled. So a couple of months ago, I went through with the procedure. And along with those teeth, I lost some savings. After insurance, my out-of-pocket bill was $7,000, an amount I actually negotiated down from $10,000. And out of curiosity, I asked the front office worker how much the 30-minute procedure would have cost me if I didn't have insurance. Her answer, $23,000. And this is Lou speaking. Man, that's expensive. I had one wisdom tooth pulled. I still had all my wisdom teeth up to about 2 years ago. One of them had decayed badly. And the dentist finally told me I needed to go see a specialist and get it pulled. But it seems to me it only cost me $500. Of course, I'm out in the boondocks. Maybe that helps. And I paid it out of pocket because I don't have any dental insurance. Never needed it, really. I guess I was blessed with good hard teeth. I've had a couple of them pulled. Just have to be careful I don't chew down on a peanut where there's no tooth anymore. That can be a little painful. But $23,000, that's astronomical. But I guess it's true. And the author goes on to say, student loans are often described as the primary financial gatekeeper for young adults. But there is a quieter one, medical bills. The median student loan debt for a bachelor's degree is roughly $36,000, according to the Education Data Initiative. But a costly medical procedure or unexpected health emergency could come close to that. High medical costs are an increasingly tricky thing for young adults. Some of us, and this again is probably Chris Gash speaking, I'm not positive. Some of us choose health insurance plans that cover routine care, but not everything is covered at 100%. Others choose high deductible plans where they often pay lower monthly premiums, but have to dish out a larger amount of out-of-pocket until the coverage kicks in. Even those lower premiums are unaffordable for some young adults, so they are foregoing insurance altogether. Well, that's another interesting article. In the interest of time, I'm going to have to cut this short. Let me skim down a little bit, see if there's anything else I should mention. Well, they say the obvious medical debt can be disruptive and demoralizing, especially for young people who are the least likely to be able to afford the cost, says John E. Schneider, the chief executive of Avalon Health Economics. It forces people to make stressful, massive decisions that can affect their lives for years to come. Nearly 38% of people ages 18 to 34 have some form of medical debt, according to a recent report published in the National Library of Medicine. And the author of this article says there was a period from high school until I got my first internship out of college when I was uninsured. And a fear of medical debt dictated many of my decisions during that time. My baseball coach would get upset when I refused to slide when there was a close play. He thought I was showing off, but I just didn't want to risk twisting an ankle or blowing out of my knee. I went without dental checkups. My only eye exam came courtesy of a raffle I won during the opening of a new wellness center in college. I would walk down a set of stairs at a snail's pace to avoid falling. I'd even forego pickup basketball games with friends. It wasn't until I finally got insurance through my post-college internship that I realized how much of my life was altered by being uninsured. Well, we'll have to stop there for this article, but that's an interesting point. I was trying to think back as I was reading this. I, of course, got insurance when I got my first job. I don't know if I was covered by my dad's plan up to that point or not. And he's no longer living, so I can't ask him. I might have been. He had a good job at MIT as a skilled machinist. I may have been covered by his plan, but I don't know. Fortunately, I didn't have any serious medical or dental issues of any kind all throughout my young years, but not everybody is so lucky. Again, that was from the Wall Street Journal, entitled "Move Over, Student Debt, Medical Bills Threaten to Derail Young Adults' Finances." That was June 13th, 2026, a couple weeks back. All right. Now we are faced with, I've got three or four good articles. Maybe what I'll do is read you the headlines first, then read a little bit more detail. One of them is from the New York Post. The government is pulling student loan money from worthless college degree programs. And it's about time. That was published July 6th. From Fox News, far left House candidate ripped for disgusting vote on misgendering bill. That was July 6th, again, Fox News. And from Lightside News, Christian nurse vindicated after regulator pursued her over misgendering pedophile patients. Let me read just a little bit of that one. This is a pretty lengthy article. It runs to 6 to 8 pages, something like that. So I'll just give you a few of the highlights. This happened in the United Kingdom. And the subheading says the UK's Nursing and Midwifery Council concluded Jennifer Melle, acted without malice, breached no confidentiality, and should face no restrictions after months of negotiation. And she has a fine picture of her. She's an African-American, or African-British in this case, lady. This appeared first in Christian Concern and was published with their permission in the Lifestyle News. A Christian nurse who was reported to the Nursing and Midwifery Council as an alleged risk to the public after declining to use the preferred gender identity of a pedophile patient and later for speaking publicly about her ordeal has had the case against her dropped. The Nursing and Midwifery Council climbed down follows months of political and public pressure of the male's treatment, and she has been supported throughout her ordeal by lawyers at the Christian Legal Center. Again, this is British, not American. Jennifer Mell, 41, a Band 6 registered nurse at Epsom and St. Helier University Hospitals, NHS Trust, had faced NMC action after an incident during a night shift on May 22, 2024, involving a biological male convicted pedophile patient who identified as female. The patient, who was catheterized with a male catheter, furiously objected to Mel using male pronouns during a clinical discussion with a doctor about the patient's discharge. The patient subjected Mel to serious racist abuse and threats of violence. However, the trust, instead of supporting Mel, investigated and treated her like a criminal for explaining that she could not go against her Christian conscience by using inaccurate pronouns. After the trust gave Mel a final written warning, they also referred her to the NMC. And again, that's short for National Midwifery, or Nursing and Midwifery Council, NMC. They also referred her to the NMC due to a concern about her fitness to practice following the incident. Well, the long and short of it is, after all this, putting her through all this, was such a foolish thing. She was finally exonerated, and this article is a lengthy discussion of her case. says in January 2026, the trust abruptly abandoned a disciplinary case against her for speaking to the media, proceedings which her legal team believed had seemed certain to end in her dismissal. And it goes into some more detail, which we simply don't have time for. But if you'd like to read that, it's free at lifesitenews.com. And it's dated July 6th, just this past Monday, so it should be easily accessible. And the title title was Christian Nurse Vindicated after regulator pursued her over misgendering pedophile patient. Again, July 6, 2026. Well, our time is just about up, so let me repeat my address if you'd like to write to me. Write to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And be sure to check out my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. I have a very wonderful lady who's kept that website going at no charge to us during the years when Elizabeth was still living, and now for me. So I thank her profusely for her kindness and her high-quality work. She's the same person that has the website kstartalkradio.com. If you've never had a chance to visit that, it's well worth a visit. She has many, many other fine programs, including this one. And I couldn't tell you the time this one is on, but if you look at her program guide on kstartalkradio.com, you can find listings. I think it's on Saturday and Sunday, but not the same time as WWCR. Once again, if you use shortwave for WWCR's broadcast, it's Thursday evening, 8 p.m., 4.840, and repeats on Saturday morning, 8 a.m., at 7.490, and those are Eastern times. In this case, Eastern Daylight Savings times. I want to thank you all for listening. If you can make a little contribution to keep the program on the air, it would be much appreciated. But you're certainly welcome to write with comments, good or bad, and you don't have to enclose money. Just write. I'd love to hear from you, to know people are listening. So thank you again for listening, and have a great week, and tune in again next week to The Divided. Good night. We'll be right back.